In many ways, I had a great job, and I was lucky to have the opportunity. The position I got hired for was because of happenstance, because my resume would not have qualified me for that role. I had an HR job in middle management that allowed a degree of making a difference in employees' lives, and I was able to move the needle in a largely positive way. But it was draining. It was always an uphill battle, and there was no work-life balance. I'd seen my parents work tirelessly for their own careers, so I tried to brush it off. I tried once to ask for help, but was told that this is normal and you can just power through it. When I finally rage quit, I had to ask myself some important questions. What did I actually want from life and what mattered most to me? Because moving up the corporate ladder, that wasn't it. Burnout is real and you don't know how bad it is until it's terrible. Is it possible to figure out what you want before you hit the bottom? Welcome to Self-Help Junkie, the podcast where we explore the world of personal development through the eyes of book enthusiasts. I'm your host, Erica Ng, a communication coach and your resident bookworm. This season, we'll be focused on finding purpose, motivation, and inspiration. But before we dive into the conversation with our guest, let's get a one-minute summary of the book. In a world where we're told, if you work hard enough, you can have it all, Greg McKeown's essentialism is telling you to do less, but focus on the essentials. Don't get me wrong, this is not the easier road. It takes discipline and knowing thyself. Most of life is noise, and if you give your attention to everything that buzzes in front of your face, you won't get any closer to what makes you feel fulfilled. Whatever your trouble is with figuring out what matters, there's a chapter for you. Feel like your schedule is too full and you never have enough time to do the stuff you really want to do? Try the chapter on escapism, which talks about how creating space in a situation isn't defeat, but actually an opportunity to escape and explore your life. Have too many options to choose from? Try the chapter on the 90% rule, where you rate options in your life between 0 and 100%. Then only take the ones that you rate as 90 or above. Life is full of opportunities, so only take the top 10%. A personal favorite of mine is for all the people pleasers out there who don't want to hurt other people's feelings. Chapter 11, Dare, the power of a graceful no. All the ways to say no so you don't have to feel awkward about it. If you're listening to this and you feel like I can prioritize my way out of burnout, you should probably read it. And with that, let's dive in. Today we have on Melissa Lau. Melissa, once a self-proclaimed busy mom, experienced an awakening after burnout-induced illness. Now, as the founder of Wealthy Mama Community, she empowers overwhelmed women to reclaim their lives with research-backed essentialism tools and intuitive mentoring. Rather than offering superficial self-care tips, Melissa guides her clients to filter out societal pressures and inner critics, reconnecting them with their inner wisdom, and prioritizes through strategic journal prompts. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you on today because of everything in your introduction. I feel like I've experienced that before, other than being a mom. And it's also something that I hear a lot of my friends having experienced before. So one question that I had for you was, why are there so many people overwhelmed in the modern day? Is it something that is unique to us, or has it always been happening, but we just didn't have the time to write it down?
I think it is something that is more unique to the modern world. I think that with technology and so many other advancements, we all have more options. And with more options comes more decisions. And with more decisions comes more overwhelm. So I think just, you know, thinking about just how many choices we have for cereal these days, it can be very overwhelming to pick the right one for the right time, you know? And it's just amplified because we have so many choices in all the different categories of our life.
Right. I'm imagining even comparing to my parents' generation, where my parents made the decision of going into banking. And that was a lifelong decision. It wasn't like every 2-3 years being like, should I move into a different industry? Should I move vertically or horizontally? It's like, even with the decisions made, you have to remake them throughout your life.
Yes. Or at least you feel the need to, right? Mm. Because that now is more accepted. I just remember when I first switched, I was in a job for a couple of years and I was switching. My mom was just so confused about why I was leaving a good job, even if it was a better opportunity, because it just wasn't the norm to leave. You found a good job and you stayed there until you got your pension, you retired, and that was kind of the plan, right? But again, it's like so many more options, just being able to move to a different location, get more money, get a better title, you know, and we're doing this, like you say, every couple of years. Like, it can be a lot of reevaluation every so often.
Right. And it can feel like second guessing rather than freedom to move into different industries. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of it too is the decision making. We have also, I think, over time coined it as either good or bad. But in the moment, it's really just a decision, right? It's whatever information you have at the time, you made a decision. It's only when we look back and it didn't go the way we wanted to that we say it was good or bad. And I don't think we always recognize that. So we spend a lot of time making the next decision, trying to decide if it's going to be a good or a bad one also, and trying to kind of hedge.
Right.
And it can be very consuming and draining.
Right. And I think as I've been talking to different people, this has really been the focal point of how do I focus my energy instead of trying to do everything, and just like, how do I figure out what is the path that I should be on? And people find that in religion, in astrology, in like talking to other people. But you've brought to us today essentialism. So how does essentialism differ from something like minimalism?
Yes. So I actually think minimalism is a subset of essentialism. So essentialism is defined as the disciplined pursuit of less but better. And it really talks about just in all areas of your life, focusing on what truly matters and understanding that there are trade-offs and you can't have it all. We don't actually want it all, just newsflash. And that being okay, right? And just understanding what feels right to you and getting rid of the rest, getting rid of the non-essential. So I think minimalism is essentialism for physical things. But there's, we can apply that principle across so many different areas of our life.
Right. And I feel like minimalism has become sort of an aesthetic or a lifestyle where people are like, capsule wardrobes, this is the way to make your life more efficient. Does essentialism mean that maybe capsule wardrobes aren't for everyone, and like maybe some people want to have a bigger wardrobe?
Yes, it is really an individual choice. And that's, I think that's why I love it so much. Like, I try to jump on the minimalism train. And by way of proxy, I guess I also was kind of driven into minimalism. We had category five hurricanes. We lost everything in our house. We lost the house itself. And I kind of became a minimalist in that way, right? A traumatic way. But, you know, I realized that there was a lot of things I thought I did that I didn't. But if you go to YouTube, you'll see that there's so many minimalists who've made a name for themselves as minimalists who are like, I don't think I love minimalism anymore. And here a lot of the drop. So I think that we don't always take into account seasons of life that we're in. We don't always take into account, you know, just like all of the different areas that we need to assess before we decide on one path. What I love about essentialism, what I love about, you know, focusing on the one thing, is that it's really about what feels right for you right now and being okay to change that. Right. So a capsule wardrobe was great for me before I had kids. But after I had kids, I realized, well, you know, I might need a little bit more clothing. There's spit up and vomit and you have all of these other substances on me. But maybe a little bit more than 33 pieces is what I need. So I think it depends on what's happening in your life. And And it's okay. It's okay for you to reassess as long as it's not just changing because it's a fad. This is the new thing. Mm.
Right. And let's backtrack a little bit. So you kind of described your journey with going from minimalism to essentialism. Can you talk a little bit about when you came across this book and what stage in life, like what did that chapter of your life look like?
Yeah, I almost want to say this book found me. Mm-hmm. I was reading another book and it mentioned the principle of essentialism. And I just looked it up. Like, I've never heard this word before. I've never heard anyone mention it. And I came upon the actual book and I read the description and I thought to myself, where has this book been my entire life? Like, it just spoke to me so deeply. Mm-hmm. And at the point of where I was in my life is it was like the perfect intersection of, you know, me doing the hard, deep work to just like find myself, like love myself again, which I think is really a huge principle in all of this. It's like, how can you design a life that you love? Mm-hmm. One that feels like you, if you don't even know who you are. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was on that journey and actually creating my own journal and really just pouring out a lot of myself onto the pages. So it came at a perfect time for me to assess, like, what is essential to me? What does that really mean? What are my core values? Mm-hmm. What really matters? And I'm forever grateful. It's a book that I will read every single year, I think, of my mm-hmm. life.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if you're willing to share, like, what did you come out with? What were your core values? And like you said, I think a lot of people, they go through life and they're like, I don't really know who I am. So where do you even start to be like, these are my values. This is who I am.
Yeah. Well, I know family is a big value for me. And I found that one out. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So I found that out very clearly when I got my cancer diagnosis, and life becomes eerily simple when you get a health scare. Mm-hmm. So I was really just concerned with my family. Really, I call that relationships and connections, people that I care about. And I really just wanted to make a difference in the world. I wanted to do something good. I wanted to have a legacy that was going to be here and impact people's lives even when I'm not anymore. Mm-hmm. So those were really the two things that matter most to me. So when I start to feel overwhelmed, even now, mm-hmm. I always come back to that place and I say, okay, is this going to help me build better relationships or is it going to help me make a difference? And if it really doesn't fit into that space, I'm usually okay with letting go of it. So it's a guiding star for me now.
Right. And I can understand when we were talking about like overwhelm, how having those guiding principles, coming back to this very simple question, can help you let go of the current anxiety and the current stress and be like, is it actually important?
Yeah. I mean, another thing that really helps me too, and can feel a little uncomfortable to people, is, you know, having a health scare and thinking I was going to die. Like, I actually keep my mortality pretty close to front of mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I'm complaining about something small or worried about something that feels so big in the moment, I just ask myself, well, how important is this going to be, like, on my deathbed? How am I going to really care what people think of me? And I do it also to help propel me forward when I'm stuck or in fear of doing something, because I'm a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. I want to say recovering, but I hope so. When I want to do something big and I'm worried about what people are going to think of me, mm-hmm. I think, oh, wow, what am I going to think of me, you know, in my last days? And I want that to be higher and more of a priority than what other people think. It's my life. I only get one.
Yeah.
So
may as well
I want to live it. Right. I want to live to the best of my ability.
Right. And so you mentioned journaling as one way to find your value, and it sounds like continue to remind yourself. Can you talk more on journaling or any other practices that you have?
Yes. So I like to say journaling found me. I didn't even realize I was journaling. When I was going through my treatment for cancer, I was just pouring my heart out on Instagram, and I didn't even realize it was journaling. Over time, I came to realize that, oh my gosh, I really love writing my feelings. That's what I called it. And I kind of got addicted to it in the sense that I realized how therapeutic, how much better I felt, regardless how I started, you know, how I felt when I started. I always felt better. So I continued that practice. And it has completely changed my life to the point where, you know, I created my own journal, which I never thought I would do. Never. Because I'm a data girl. I'm a math girl. I've always been a numbers person. And I would always say like, oh, you know, that's for the writers. It's for the English majors. Right. So I never thought that I would actually create something like that. And it was a struggle for me to do so. But again, I kept focused on, what is it that I want to leave? Like, I really want to help people. And I think just being vulnerable and being open to change and exploring a new side of yourself, journaling helped me do all of that. It really gave me the courage to do that, because had I not had the experience of just writing and being and reading the things I was writing and really appreciating the inner parts of me. Like, I have an inner wisdom that I didn't realize existed. Mm-hmm. I relied heavily on so much external validation. I still sometimes do, right? I'm going to be completely honest, but I've gotten so much better at trusting myself.
Right.
And, you know, it feels good. And I have journaling to thank for that.
Right. And there's definitely something solid about having it documented, because even if you don't trust yourself in the moment, when you go back and read it, you're like, wow, like, I'm actually pretty smart. Like, did I do that? That's my writing, definitely.
I challenge everyone to just write. And I say, even if you just write once a year, mm-hmm. to go back and see how you changed from that one post in 365 days is mind blowing. The way you write, what you're talking about, what you're concerned with, it's right. Amazing.
Right. And obviously our memories are terrible. Like, we misremember things all the time. So actually documenting it is really helpful. And you were talking about the process of creating the journal. So did that mean like the prompts that you wrote? Could you tell me more about the journal that you created?
Yeah. So I wanted to create something. I am a working mom. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to create something for the working mom who doesn't have a lot of time, but who really wants to get to know herself slowly and deeply. And I also wanted to create something that I really didn't find anywhere. So my journal, it starts with a quote for each topic. And it's not a quote that I wrote. It's a quote from a famous woman. Mm-hmm. And then it has a page of just, this is something that I wrote that just kind of gets you in the right mindset. And I think that's what I was missing from a lot of journals, is there's always a prompt. But sometimes my mind is still so busy from the day that I'm not really ready to answer the question yet. So I give you 3/4 of a page to read to kind of just get you in the frame of mood, the mind. It's almost like chatting with a best friend, hopefully. And then there is the prompt, and the prompt is a list. So my journal is all based on list-based journaling. So you write a top 10 list first, and then on the next page, you look at that list and you reflect and whatever comes up for you. So maybe there are observations, maybe there are patterns that you're seeing. Maybe it's just like, wow, is that what I really wrote? Like, that surprised me, you know? Right. And then you can just have a page to kind of reflect on what the list actually looks like. And for anyone who does have the journal. I always tell people, I know there's space for 10. And if you don't write 10, that is more than okay. I look at it as a legacy book too. Like if it's something that one day you want to give to your kids, I think it'd be so cool for them to have a book that's all about you. So 10 things that make you cry, 10 things that motivate you,
Yeah,
10 things that make you laugh out loud. Like, I think it's just a sweet like snapshot in time of, you know, who you really were.
For sure. And you specifically said that this was for busy moms. Why do you think moms in particular, or like, why did you create it for moms? Or do you feel like moms in particular, this would be like the most useful for?
Yeah. So I created it with moms in mind, but other people have told me that it has been very useful for them. And even men are like, why didn't you create one for us? I'm like, well, you're not my target audience. My heart's with working moms. So as a working mom myself, I feel like we need a lot of help, but we don't ask for it. Mm-hmm. And we have so much trouble asking for help that I just wanted to offer an accessible way to start to help themselves. And, you know, journaling, it takes 5 to 7 minutes to do it. And you don't have to be dressed up. You don't have to be outside. You can find a little bit of time while your kids are asleep. And, you know, you can feel so much better and start to just reflect a little by little on how you want to live life differently tomorrow. And I find that moms, we, as soon as we have kids, like almost immediately, we start to choose little by little them over us. And if you do that long enough, you really can get to a point where you don't recognize yourself over time. Mm-hmm. And this could be over months, years, sometimes even decades. So I actually call this baselining. Mm-hmm. So it's BASS. It's becoming a stranger slowly. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people do it, but I think moms do it very well.
Excelling at it.
Excelling. We're experts at baselining. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I wanted to create something that they could start to find themselves again, slowly by surely. But without, you know, thinking about affordability, thinking about time, thinking about, you know, not having to get a babysitter, like all of those things. So that's why I created the journal specifically for moms, but it can help anyone.
Right. I like that idea. I do think that it is very essential what you were saying about kind of asking questions about yourself and for 5 to 7 minutes a day, prioritizing yourself. I'm thinking back to all the Instagram reels that I got around Christmas time where they were talking about stocking stuffers and how like everyone in the family had stocking stuffers except the mom because the mom didn't buy it for herself and like no one got her anything. It's very sad. And if mom doesn't know who she is, she can be like, okay, yeah, like that's okay. Everyone else is happy, so that's my happiness. Like, no, you deserve chocolates in your stocking.
But I mean, it's almost the norm. It is the norm where our happiness is and self-worth is tied to that of others. Mm-hmm. That is the norm. We are the creators of happiness, not necessarily the recipient.
Yeah.
You know, and that can be, it can be sad. It can feel a little bit lonely. Yeah. And a lot of pressure to continue to create these magical moments for everyone, not really experiencing it yourself.
Right. And then feeling guilt if you're like, oh, but I should be grateful that my family is like happy and healthy. Like, yeah. Anyways.
It's a ridiculous cycle. It's wild. What you do. It's like you show up and you do so much and then you go to bed feeling guilty.
Right. Right.
What?
Ridiculous.
How are we doing this?
And one of the things that you also brought up was self-care and talking about social media, self-care is all over, but you were saying that some of these tips can be empty. Can you talk more about your feelings on that and like what you see as problematic?
Yeah, I don't want to participate in self-care shaming, you know, but I do think that it is a much more broader experience than what we can sometimes see on social media. And I think the lore for many of us is that those things look like a lot more fun and they're easy. They're comfortable, right? Like the mask and the massages. I love that stuff too. Don't get me wrong. Like, please take me to a spa day every time. But the journaling, the meditation, you know, having tough conversations, setting boundaries, like that's really all self-care, but it's hard self-care. And that's the one that we tend to avoid, but can have the most impact on our lives. So I think chasing the other one and just carving out time for that is not enough. And so I know that journaling is not sexy and cool. But I want to help do that because it really is experiencing some of that like fulfillment, true fulfillment. Like money doesn't even match it. It's no comparison. So I just want other women to experience that as well. And they can do that themselves. They don't have to wait on someone else to do it.
Right. And definitely there is an element of commercialization when it comes to the self-care. Like it is such a beautiful idea, but it's a lot of times like buy this item or like go to this place, spend money, and then you will care about yourself.
Right. Right. I mean, we all know what it is, but we're still like, sign me up.
I still want it.
But also it's a bit of a getaway. It's a bit of an escape from the hustle and bustle of life. So that part of it, I really appreciate because a lot of us need more rest, mental rest, physical rest, emotional rest than we sometimes say out loud. So I think that is really like a cry for rest. But it can be so much broader, so much bigger than, you know, the nail salon.
Right. So it sounds like maybe instead of being like, we need to have a spa day, it's like, maybe we need to rethink an entire structure of work weeks and discuss if that is helping our lives.
Flexible work schedule. Yes. Maybe not require me to be here from 9 to 5 and care more about the work getting done as opposed to when I am doing the work. Yes, I would love to have more of those conversations.
And one of the things that you personally do is that you teach women to tailor like self-care to their unique needs. Can you talk more on that? Like, I do think that there is this idea of self-care, like you said, with spas, and you've mentioned journaling, but like, what if they aren't a journaler, or like, what if they aren't a spa person? What could they be? How could you tailor it to different people?
Yeah. So the first thing that we do is if we're talking self-care specifically, I want to know what lights you up. And I want you to know that. So we start as early on in your childhood. What did you love to do when you were growing up? Like I love to draw. I love to draw dresses and Ninja Turtles. And, you know, like I love to draw and I don't do it as much anymore. So I'm going to start drawing more again this year and it might suck, but that's okay. You know, like I just want to do more things and explore more things that I used to do, especially if I don't have like a big list to choose from. But what we want to do is I want to help women make the list. So we just start pulling different things so you can ask people, because sometimes we don't even know how to answer the question for ourselves and we're not going to get too hung up on that. I would love it to come from an internal place, but you know, so you're going to check with your childhood. You're going to ask friends and family, well, what was I like as a child? What did I talk about? What did I love to do? And then you can also, as an adult, there are probably things that you look at that you don't even realize you're looking at. So I'm like, when you're on Pinterest, what are you scrolling through? What images are you looking at? Are you looking at a lot of crocheting? Okay, maybe there's a little bit of a draw there. Maybe we can find some yarn and start some things. So there are little cues that you perform throughout the day that you may not be aware of that do point to things that you have interest in. Maybe if you like to watch golf, you know, maybe that's something you can take up. I had a client who really loved exercising, and that was a form of self-care for her. And she just, you know, didn't make time for it anymore because she became a mama. So it's figuring out what that is for you and really making a list. And then we're just going to experiment. We're just going to have fun on that list and see what works for you. And then we're going to try to take that list and find time for it on your calendar, right? Which means that we're going to have to remove some things from your calendar now because most likely it's packed. Mm-hmm. Right. And then we will also try to implement some productivity tips so that you're utilizing the time that you have to do work and meetings. And we're going to just try to make sure that we're maximizing that time on the calendar as well.
Right. Right. And I like that idea of going back to childhood to figure out things that you love. And I was obsessed, like absolutely obsessed with Harry Potter growing up. And I can't imagine going back to reread it and like having that same level of joy. But there are ways of kind of making it more suitable for your stage in life now. Yeah. Like one of the things that really spoke to me was this podcast called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, where they read through each chapter of Harry Potter and they treat it as if it were like the Bible or like a sacred text. And they talk about each character as if there's more to their backstory and they read into it. And it's so cool. It's so wonderful.
That's super cool. And I would even dig into with you. Mm-hmm. Well, what is it that you love so much about Harry Potter? Mm. Because it may not just be the book, even though they're fantastic. I read all of them as well. But it could be, you know, that you love being transported into a magical world, mm-hmm. right? And then it, maybe that lends more to reading that type of literature, mm-hmm. right? So maybe that's what that means, or, you know, who knows, but we would explore that more to get to, well, what is it that you really love? Like, what is the essence of why you mm-hmm. love Harry Potter? Because right. it could be more broad than you think.
Right, right. So asking the why rather than just taking the surface level item on the list.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool. And one of the things that you were mentioning earlier was when you want to add something into your life, you need to take some stuff away or like make it more efficient. And this is, I think, something that everybody struggles with. Like I have plenty of clients who work in the tech industry and they just have like 6 hours a day of meetings. I'm like, how do you have time to do your actual work when you have that many meetings? So like, do you have any tips that you have found that have either worked for you or for your clients?
Yeah. So with the meetings, I have coached my clients through having tough conversations about how to evaluate if a meeting is worth going to and how to communicate that and have that conversation with their superiors, because not every meeting is essential. Mm-hmm. So I know it can be hard when you don't have control of it. But there are some ways you can have the conversations to kind of advocate for yourself so that you can do the work that you're there to do, right? And I think that's a win-win for everyone. And then when it comes to the meetings themselves, I think that not necessarily the meetings, but thinking about when you structure meetings. So sometimes batching can help as well. Mm-hmm. So I do this. I had another client who did this as well. We would say, okay, well, let's just have some meeting days if we can. So every Tuesday and Thursday, you're going to try to get all of your meetings kind of on that day. And then, you know, that's a day you get super dolled up and you have all your meetings and you look wonderful. And then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you can be in pajamas and no one will know, and you can like actually focus on deep work. Right. So that's a tool that has been really helpful to me and my clients. I would say for meetings, but taking things off your calendar, I think that I love the focusing question. And that question is like, what is one thing that I can do? What is the one thing that I can do that will make everything else easier or unnecessary? Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about, you know, what to do next, and you're asking that yourself that question, you may be able to then take some things off of your calendar because it doesn't meet that criteria. It's mm-hmm. just busy work. Right. Mm-hmm. But is it going to help you move the needle on that big project? Then, right. yeah, then we can move that to the list and let's tackle the things that are really going to get you progress in the areas that really truly matter, whether that's at work or at home.
Right. So it's a way to prioritize tasks. And you mentioned at home, which was the follow-up question that I was going to ask you. I feel like work, it's easier to divvy up into, okay, this is essential, this is going to move the needle. But with being a mom, a lot of these tasks are like long, long term. And it's not like you're going to see the results tomorrow. It's like, I'm fighting you on eating broccoli because I want you to like be healthy for the rest yeah. of your life. So when it comes to finding out what is essential tasks to do at home, do you follow the same structure, or is there another way that you like to pare down?
No, I think I follow the same structure. The thing with being at home especially is that you have to give yourself a lot of grace and realize that you can't do it all, and that's okay. But relationships are important to me. So, mm-hmm. you know, if I find myself with the urge to work longer hours, I try to call myself out on that and say, mm-hmm. you know, you want to close the laptop and go read the bedtime story. That's what in the long run is going to feel so much better for mm-hmm. you and for your kids. So there's one thing to kind of know what to do. And the next thing is like actually pulling yourself right. away and reminding yourself, this is the thing that matters. So I think once you name those things and you're very clear about what they are, it's really just then the follow through, which takes practice, a whole lot of grace. It can be hard, but it's worth it. It is worth it. You feel so much better. And when my kids get back to bed, if I really want to continue working, I can. But I try to remember, okay, I want to spend this time with them. And it's really not that much time. Mm. So 15 minutes can go a whole, like it can go a very long way. You know, right. the chapter of a book, or, you know, a really great conversation, or beautiful prayers, you know, like right. you can do a whole lot of connecting in 15 minutes. So I sometimes like to think of my days. I know we talk about 1 hour blocks, but I like to think of my days sometimes in 15 minute increments mm. because then I feel like I have so much more opportunity to do more things and I don't feel so limited mm-hmm. throughout my day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I love that. Like what you were talking about with the 15 minutes with your kids, like it might be 15 minutes, but it's also 15 minutes of them at this specific age. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's such a common thing that parents say. It's like they grow up so fast. It's like each one of these, you're not going to get them back. Whereas work, there's always going to be more work for you to do. Always. Like it never ends.
And there's going to be tons of laundry at home too. Like laundry is a lifestyle. It is not anything to be finished. It's never going to be finished. So it's like this obsession that we have with like always, like I have laundry right here on the ground that has been sorted that needs to be put away. Mm-hmm. And before I would be like, I feel such a bad mom because mm-hmm. I have laundry that hasn't been put away. And now I'm like, no, when I'm finished here, I'm going to go talk to my kids in. I'm going to go spend some time with them. And then I will get to the laundry. And if I only get to one pile tonight, then I have one less pile to deal with tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Until there's another pile because exactly. you have two kids.
It's not going to be done anyway. So why am I stressing?
Right. Well, I think this is a wonderful note to be ending on. Melissa, thank you so much for your time. If people are trying to find out more about you or about your journal, where can they find you?
So I am at thewealthymama.com, and wealthy is W-E-L-L because it's all about wellness and well-being. And I also can be found on YouTube. I'm the Wealthy Mama on YouTube as well. And then if you need anything from there, I have links at YouTube and my Substack as well. So yeah, that's where you can find the journals. Right now they're all sold out, and I will be releasing and launching a new batch come Christmas time. Again, because I am all about, you know, making sure that I understand the trade-offs. And right now our lives are very busy, so I want to make sure that I'm building a business around my life and not the other way around. So it might not make sense to people that I don't have a journal available all throughout the year, but it makes 100% sense for my life.
Amazing. I love that you are living proof of everything that you're talking about. I think that's so important to see and to hear, so that people give themselves the grace to, you know, start making those changes in their own lives.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. It was wonderful having you.
It was a pleasure being here. I had so much fun.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. This podcast was brought to you by me, Erica Ng, and my sound guy, Stevie, who is the reason there was a huge upgrade in the quality between episode 4 and 5 of season 1. If you enjoyed, please send this episode to a friend who could use the advice or someone who would find this a great listen. If you have thoughts or tips you'd like to share, please do at Self Help Junkie Pod on Instagram, Twitter, or Gmail. I'll see you guys next time.